from deep inside your radio.
Well, hello, everyone. And as if, ladies and gentlemen, to reify, thank you very much, my continued rants about the alleged seasonality of colds and flu and how that seems to be questionable. At least nobody can explain it. So it remains questionable until explained, doesn't it? I came down here to New Orleans, Louisiana, which this program is originating one more time, where it is officially, according to the guys on the radio out of Jazz Fest yesterday, quote, hotter than the hinges of hell, unquote, and got sick. Got a low-grade something. Unless it's an aerogenic infection, word I think I'm coining on the spot to describe the growing number of illnesses that you get just by flying in American planes, which I believe have now officially banned oxygen from the passenger cabin. So you're just breathing, you're not breathing air anymore, you're just breathing other people's germs. But it's good for, you know, it builds up your immune system. The immune system needs a challenge every once in a while, so get on a plane. Anyway, so this is going to be a lazy man's edition of the show, first of all because it's so hot here that you have to slow down, or the alternative is grim, secondly, because I don't trust, after what happened last week, if you heard last week's show, you're a lucky person, because the stations that carried it live got about, between half and two-thirds of it. And just for your reference, ladies and gentlemen, if that ever happens again, and why should it, you can always catch up with the intact broadcast during the week at www.harryshearer.com or www.kcrw.com. It's on the internet. In its real, uninterrupted form. So, word to the would-be wise. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not in Southern California, but Southern California was at the top of a lot of the news this week. The news that inexplicably pegs itself to anniversaries. We just got through with the six-month anniversary, of course, a linguistic impossibility. Of 9/11, and just in time for the 10-year anniversary of the Los Angeles riot, so-called. Having lived through it, I can attest that a lot of the riot was basically opportunistic crime. Maybe most of it. I did not see or read nearly all of the anniversary-pegged coverage of the events of 10 years ago in Los Angeles. I heard some of it. Saw some of it on television. And I would venture to guess, and I'm, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, right. But I don't believe that any of the coverage mentioned what I, at the time, kept insisting was the salient fact of that event. And in the wake of all the people, you know, the second Rodney King trial came and went, and there was a lot of, will it happen again? Can it happen again? Won't it happen again? Must it happen again? And we heard a lot of that this week again. That happened again. And yeah, that thing can happen again with the one essential fact present that was present in 1992. A little unrest erupted at the corner of Florence and Normandy Avenues in South Central following the Rodney King verdict. And there was no police response to the incident for hours, because the police chief, Daryl Gates, was at a fundraiser in Bel Air and couldn't be raised by telephone, and there was some high-level dispute as to whether and in how to respond. And the dispute, without police response, was broadcast on live television. So you give me a television commercial that says, hey, police aren't working. Go to it, everybody. Everybody. And yes, it can happen again. But it was interesting to me that it was important for NPR, along with the commercial networks, to time this coverage to this anniversary. You know, it was important not to time the coverage of a particular movie to the moments in time when people could actually see it around the country. That isn't important to NPR. But it was important to time the anniversary. It wouldn't have been as newsworthy 2 months ago or 2 months from now, would it? It's not just... And also, it's important for NPR to run its own polls, isn't it? Because they're so much better than the commercial network's polls. Not that we're alone in this, ladies and gentlemen. Today, a government minister in Britain slams the BBC for being too much like the commercial networks. It's just, you know, it's because, as Ry Cooter never sang, Archer Daniels Midland feeds us all. Hello, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm going to a party across the track. It's a hole in the wall, people call a crack. Do you want to jump, children? 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 Boy, you better stop flirting with married girls before you end up in another world. Do you want to jump, children? 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 Red beans and rice is a good old dish, but when Friday comes, I gotta have my fish. Do you want to jump, children? 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 When I'm dry, but ooh, that good old wine makes me oh so high. Do you want to jump, children? 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 I'm in love with a girl afraid to call her name. Big Jim, you know, I know you understand. Do you want to jump, children? 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 I'm sorry. Why, you really are. Baby, the piano man.
Don't waste your time being angry when a moment's better with a smile. If you feel your time's been wasted, waste it here for a while. Standing at the bus stop, just across from crowds, waiting for that driver to take me to my heavenly house. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will they wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. When the river banks are overflowing and the streetcar has seen its day, when all is gone, the plantations trim a bucare, I'll be swinging to that music on higher ground, where pops is blowing walk on, up with Gabriel making sacred sounds. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
Oh, what will you wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. has seen its day. When all is gone, the plantation, Treme the Fucare, I'll be swinging to that music on higher ground, where pops is blowing walk on, upward gable making sacred sound. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will you wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. See you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will they wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal
what
Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna lay all my burdens down. I'm gonna put on my golden crown. At the foot of Canal Street.
Not quite from the foot of Canal Street, from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana. Welcome to another edition of the show. And a hopefully intact one, ladies and gentlemen. We have fingers, eyes, toes, other body parts that come in multiples crossed. That's all we can do. A follow-up on the compromising of news correspondents for the television networks, a story that this program has been focusing on, in a way, for a couple of weeks. ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Nancy Snyderman will not be appearing this week on Good Morning America. She's been suspended for a week without pay because she violated ABC News policy by making a radio commercial for Tylenol, according to insiders at the network. No, she didn't host the Coca-Cola stockholders meeting. She made a radio commercial for Tylenol. That's the difference, you see. I know what you're thinking. I know what I'm thinking. An ABC News spokesman refused to comment on the situation, saying the division did not discuss personnel matters. But ABC News has a longstanding policy that does not permit employees to endorse products or perform in paid advertisements. What about host? ABC News officials decided on Snyderman's punishment last week, according to sources in the New York Daily News. Snyderman is a surgeon who regularly reports on medical issues for Good Morning America and 2020. She also has been an occasional fill-in for the morning program's anchors. She has publicly acknowledged that the commercial was a mistake. And she issued an apology. Oh, well, this should be an apology of the week. Sorry about that. There's only one other one this week, and it's a good one. We'll get to it in a moment. But she issued an apology, so that qualifies. ABC News executives learned of the commercial, which she recorded in January, when it was brought to their attention by the Daily News. Interesting. The stockholders meeting was brought to CBS News' attention by, just Le Show. Snyderman asked the makers of Tylenol to pull the commercials from the air as quickly as possible, and the company obliged. In the ad, Snyderman is introduced and reads a health update on how acetaminophen, the generic name for Tylenol, does not interfere with the effects of certain prescription drugs. Her portion of the commercial was followed by an announcer's product plug. She was paid for her role in the commercial. Well, that's less of an endorsement than... Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't an announcer that came in and said all that great stuff about Coca-Cola, was it? Unless it was a sound-alike. Only development on that score this week is from the columnist in the Washington Post who picked up the story from this program, who ran into Charlie Rose last night at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and quoted Charlie Rose as saying, "That was so unfair. We've gotten together in New York."
We're so sorry.
Yes, it's an exclusive feature of this broadcast. The apology of the week. This is a good one. You'll like this. This is for history buffs. People who've been waiting for this for maybe a while, you know, because time has gone by. Things have happened. things have not been said, things are now being said. What the hell? What a lazy intro that is. Former Dateline London, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger has admitted that mistakes were, quote, quite possibly, unquote, made in the administrations in which he served. Kissinger was responding to demands that he answer accusations relating to alleged crimes in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and South America. Speaking on Wednesday to the United Kingdom's Institute of Directors annual conference at Royal Albert Hall, hey, me and Henry the K. He said he did not believe that courts were the right place to determine what had happened in the 1960s and 1970s. He said, quote, no one can say that he served in an administration that did not make mistakes. The decisions made in high office are usually 51-49 decisions, so it is quite possible that mistakes were made, unquote. Yeah, that's an apology that married people recognize. Boy, we've had that kind on here before, but but courts are not the right place to determine that. Speeches in outside the area where you're sworn is the place to determine what happened in the 60s and 70s, I think. Or normal meetings. Fox News Channel, ladies and gentlemen, other news of the media, of course, describes itself as the place America trusts for fair and balanced reporting. And apparently for experts whose credentials aren't checked before they're put on the air. The Fox News Channel, this is from the... this is from the dog trainer in Southern California. Ooh. The Fox News Channel thought it had found an asset when it hired Joseph A. Cafasso, a gruff, barrel-chested former military man, as a consultant to help in its coverage of the fighting in Afghanistan. He claimed to have won the Silver Star for bravery, served in Vietnam, and was part of the secret failed mission to rescue hostages in Iran in 1980. For more than 4 months, Mr. Cafasso assisted and shared tips with reporters, producers, and on-air consultants. On March 11th, he abruptly left Fox. Amid complaints, he had overstepped his bounds and had become an annoyance. Gee, that's all it takes to leave Fox. No, it's not. Soon afterward, Fox News and many associates of Mr. Cafasso learned that his office style may have been the least of his problems. The real story was that he was not who he said he was. He released a statement last week in which he said he was the victim of a gossip campaign by self-centered individuals with their own political agendas. He said he had retired from the Army as a lieutenant colonel. Records indicate otherwise. People at Fox News had taken his credentials at face value. Well, that's what a news organization does, doesn't it? Just takes guy who walks in the door and says, I did this at face value, puts him on the air as an expert? Sure. So with the presidential campaign of Patrick Buchanan, for which he was an organizer, WABC Radio in New York, and several representatives, military officials, and activists to whom he had sold himself for years. Records indicate that his total military experience was 44 days of boot camp at Fort Dix. And his honorable discharge was as a private first class. He had promised to appear at the New York Times to provide documents contradicting those records, but never appeared. Military officials said they had no record of anyone named Joseph Cafasso retiring as a lieutenant colonel. One senior Fox executive said Mr. Cafasso was so convincing and seemed to have such respected patrons at the Pentagon that there was no reason to check him. He was so confident, the executive said. The sheer brazenness of it is just remarkable. The executive added Mr. Cafasso was hired because of his contacts, not necessarily his military background. Joe was just plugged in everywhere, the executive said. He appeared able to call almost any military base and have a friend there. So he had friends in military bases. Okay. The Fox executive said producers and correspondents were required to verify information offered by Cafasso. Some doubted his credentials. In November, an executive asked a private security consulting and training firm to look into his service record. The firm, called the Spartan Group, made up of Special Forces veterans, concluded that he was lying about the hostage mission in Iran and said it could find no service record for him. Who would make up that he was part of the failed hostage rescue mission in Iran? That's probably what made them believe him, because that was a failed mission. Yeah, I was part of that. I didn't get the hostages out. You're hired. Now, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. No, I'm not saying that. The record said it. It's time for me to read the trades for you. You'll like this. This has been all over the internet this week, but It's from the Cable World magazine. An interview with Jamie Kellner, CEO of Turner Broadcasting. If you're wondering who has made CNN so show busy that it's now second in the ratings to Fox News Channel, this is the guy. I'll read an interview with him from the trades for you. He starts off kind of sensible. Jamie Kellner. I don't think you want to move your product from analog to digital TV unless you have very narrow networks that are supportable on a digital tier. Most of ours are much broader networks than that. What is the programming model going to be in digital? What can you afford to produce and do with a high enough quality level to satisfy viewers on digital? There's probably going to be a lot of multiplexing and time shifting and things like that. Taking our networks, TBS and TNT, multiplexing them, taking the sports out, putting the movies in prime time. There's ways you can repackage our networks. Question, how do you do that without destabilizing the current model? Jamie, how would that destabilize it? We'd be running the exact same commercials. It would all be incremental viewership. And that's just one idea. I'm a big believer we have to make television more convenient, or we will drive the penetration of personal video recorders and things like that, which is, I'm not sure is good for the cable industry or the broadcast industry or the networks. Question. Why not? Jamie Kellner. Because of the ad skips. It's theft. Your contract with the network when you get the show is you're going to watch the spots. Otherwise, you couldn't get the show on an ad-supported basis. Anytime you skip a commercial, you're actually stealing the programming. Question. What if you have to go to the bathroom or get up to get a Coke? Is this Charlie Rose asking the questions? No, it's not. Jamie. I guess there's a certain amount of tolerance for going to the bathroom. But if you formalize it, I don't think it means formalize going to the bathroom, but that's me just interposing here, ladies and gentlemen. But if you formalize it and you create a device that skips certain second increments, you've got that for only one reason. Unless you go to the bathroom for 30 seconds. They've done that just to make it easy for someone to skip a commercial. Question. What if I'm using my personal video recorder to rewind a story on CNN or pause during Moneyline with Lou Dobbs? That's good for you, isn't it? If I can keep watching the network when I might otherwise miss the shows? Jamie. Is it good for me? It's good to make it easier for consumers to watch the programs they want to watch. I'm not opposed to consumers getting a program without commercials in it. But they have to create a new model that charges them for that programming the way HBO charges them. Question. Cable operators are putting personal video recorders in their boxes. A lot of people are getting into this concept, and operators are saying, hey, if people are willing to pay for video on demand, give us something we can sell. How does that fit in with Turner? Our company is working on a number of different video on demand models. The question is whether these are going to be head-end based models or in-home models, and whether ultimately there's going to be a license required for use of the copyrighted material, i.e. television programs, or whether people make a bet that the Betamax case can cover this usage. I'm going to interpose here for a moment. The Betamax case is when the Supreme Court ruled it was legal for you to have a VCR and tape stuff off the air. Back to Jamie. My bet would be the Betamax case is not going to cover this usage. What was a highly questionable decision with the new technology will not stand up to the potential of the digital world. Whether there's going to be a challenge, or whether it's going to be legislation, there's going to be some way in the digital world that we can protect copywritten material. I think that's inevitable. Question. The New York Times has an electronic edition that disappears a certain time after it's downloaded. Do you see a possibility that I download that show and you give me a license to watch it three times and then it disappears? Jamie. Again, I think that whether it's legislation, whether it's new technology, whether it's challenging Betamax, whatever it is, we're going to have to find a way to protect copywritten material, or there will be less of it made. Or it will not be made available in Windows where it's not protectable, and that's not good for consumers. So there's got to be some way it's protected. Didn't ask him what happens if you read the newspaper without looking at the ads. Final question. If video on demand were delivered with all the commercials intact, would that make you more comfortable with the concept? Jamie. Yeah. The skipping of commercials is part of it. The second part of it is whether anybody has the right to take product and deliver it in a different way by getting between the consumer and the network. I got to go to the bathroom for 30 seconds, ladies and gentlemen. It's a need I feel whenever I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Jamie Kellner, ladies and gentlemen, who helped start Fox Television and the WB. This is not some small-timer talking at you. This is big cheese. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, for the rest of the broadcast, we're going to take a look back at some of the events that may have been important to us during the early part of this year. We're at the five-month mark, 19. The hell happened to me? 2002, it's time to take a look back. First of all, a controversy that's still fresh in our minds after the conclave of the cardinals in Rome and their return to this country. The refusal, I don't know if you saw it this week, of the Boston Archdiocese to go through with its settlement, its planned settlement for the victims of the sexual abuse of Paul of one particular priest. I don't even know how you pronounce his name. Gehagen. They had this agreement for a settlement all reached with the victims of the abuse of that priest. And then the financial committee, which the archbishop or the cardinal had said, that was just advisory, suddenly told him, don't pay the settlement because we're going to need the money to pay for more settlements for more abuse victims of more priests. So, as I say, the story of priestly abuse is still hot on our agenda, which makes this return to a moment 3 months ago on this broadcast still arguably topical.
You were more than a father, heavenly kind of father.
This is Le Show from New Orleans, Louisiana, in case you can't guess. A couple of more items in the digital wonderland before we continue looking back in the early part of this year. From a listener, Lewis in Houston, just thought I would report from Houston, a digital city. No, I'm not writing to say suddenly digital TV has gotten better. It has not. In fact, the locals seem to be having, this is, by the way, in the wake of the deadline that just passed, May 1st, for all television stations in the country to go digital. This place has, or this, whence this broadcast is originating. Four people are watching. Anyway, he says, in fact, the locals seem to be having more problems making it work. The picture is still poor. Hey, that crystal clear digital picture they keep writing about in the papers? You notice that? Every story about digital television in the press just repeats that canard, capable of delivering crystal clear. Here's a person who's watching it on the ground. The picture is still poor. And the locals seem to be proud that they can expand a bad picture to fill my entire screen. They now seem to be dragging the audio down to digital levels, and this is not good. Now shows have mouths moving, and there is sound, but I have to work to figure out what mouth said what. It looks like a dubbed foreign film. That's from a user in a digital city, ladies and gentlemen. You think I've been kidding? I don't kid on this show. You know that. Why would I do that? And Dateline New York, a federal judge has ordered Sonic Blue, the company behind Replay TV, that's the alternate to TiVo, to invade the privacy of its customers by gathering data on how the customers use the device and turning that data over to the broadcasting companies that have sued it. It's the latest shot in a battle between Sonic Blue and NBC. NBC has sued Sonic Blue over the Replay device. Broadcasters complaining the device allows viewers to easily, here it is again, skip over commercials. Allowing viewers the choice to ignore commercials could possibly threaten the free programming. Apparently broadcasters aren't hip to the idea that most viewers see TV commercials as an annoyance. The mute button, of course. Sonic Blue is making a great deal of noise about the judge's order, which essentially orders the company to develop a way to keep track of what its customers do. Chief Executive Ken Potashner says the company would be required to turn over data on what programs Replay owners watch, how many commercials they skip, and so on, data that would be traceable back to individual devices. Sonic Blue will fight the order. My information is that TiVo does it already, not because they're required to, but because they're interested in selling the data. Let's go digital now. What do you think? Ladies and gentlemen, one of the great media stories of earlier this year got unbelievable amounts of attention was ABC Television's attempt to lure David Letterman away from CBS to the late-night slot on ABC, currently occupied by Nightline, which ruffled many feathers at ABC News. Not Dr. Snyderman. She was busy making a Tylenol commercial, but, you know, the other feathers. Ultimately, of course, Dave decided to stay at CBS. After Ted got a little petulant, ABC gave him a vote of confidence for the next 2 years. But as listeners to this program know, there was a tape floating around, possibly apocryphal, of Ted's attempt to placate the ownership of Disney by trying to reach what they were trying. You know, their attempt was to try to reach a younger audience. And Ted, I think, did make a good faith attempt to move in that direction.
From the Rune Arledge Theater in New York City, where none of the anchors has barnacles, this is Late Night Line with Ted Koppel. Tonight, CNN newsman Aaron Brown, former National Security Advisor Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Paul Schaefer. And the ABC News Symphony. And now, a man who's more serious than his hair, Ted Koppel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to this new incarnation of Nightline. This program started out as America Held Hostage. It's ending up as Ted Koppel Held Hostage. No, I kid the good people at ABC. This network is doing so poorly, Drew Carey has to improvise his own ratings. No, thank you, but I swear to you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have the slightest idea what that means. But I do know that we are in this beautifully refurbished theater, and we're going to have a very good time getting to the bottom of today's news. Paul, how...
Yes,
Paul
sir.
Schaefer, how are you, sir?
Ted, I am fine. I'm glad to be on ABC. I've now been on every network in the United States and Canada, except for Global.
Well... Global?
Yeah, it's a Canadian thing. Yeah. It's a swinging little syndication setup.
Paul Schaefer, you are totally steeped in show business.
Well, Ted, let me just say, for my daughter's bat mitzvah,
yes,
we are building a green room in the temple, because...
But, Paul, do you follow the news at all?
I love the news.
You do?
I love the news.
And then I have the feeling I'm being... set up for something here.
No, they don't write for me on this show either.
All right, well, that at least is reassuring. Our first guest tonight is a one-time, sometime occupant of this chair. He was also the very popular host of ABC's virtually unwatched all-night newscast, and he's now enjoying great success over at CNN, hosting his own broadcast, even though it's on cable. Please welcome my friend, Mr. Aaron Brown. Aaron, thank you, sir, for coming uptown to visit with us.
Ted, it is so difficult for me to believe how this show has changed. There are colognes on the dressing room toilet.
There are indeed, and there's Irish coffee at the snack table.
Yes, it is impossible to not notice that.
Aaron, you've been on the air at CNN ever since September 11th of last year. Mm-hmm. Like this broadcast, your career was born in crisis. Now, 6 months on, you're changing with the times.
That's right, Ted, and I have to say that's just also a perfectly written introductory sentence.
Well... You are too kind.
But yet, it's hard to maintain a feeling of alarm and crisis 6 months after the heartbreak and devastation of 9/11. If our lives didn't list back toward normal, we'd all go mad. Mm-hmm. So, yes, given the more competitive news environment we now live in, Ted, it wouldn't feel right in that war to be a conscientious objector.
Well, Aaron, you are no slouch when it comes to writing your ad libs yourself. But to pursue the point about competition, opposite you are Greta Van Susteren on Fox and former presidential unhopeful Alan Keyes on MSNBC.
That's correct, Ted. And if Mr. Keyes were the one who was beating me in the ratings, I'd probably be sitting here right now wearing an ugly patterned sweater and gesticulating with my hands a lot more.
But in fact, you are losing viewers to your one-time colleague, suddenly monominous Greta.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, this sounds like an audience that would appreciate onomatopoeia. But yes, Ted, that is correct. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, in the old days, maybe we would have dealt with her challenge by being more serious than her, do a more thoughtful broadcast.
Well, in all fairness, not a major challenge in itself.
You've seen her show.
No.
But this being the 21st century, mm-hmm. Ted, the people at CNN felt, and I had to agree, that we had to meet the competition head on. So yesterday afternoon I had, and this is very awkward for me to say this, I I had some eye work done.
You didn't.
I did.
I brought
a before picture for you.
This is unreal.
Well, here's the part I really did have a little trouble with, Ted. We videotaped the surgery, and it's our segment 7 5-part series all next week.
Yeah.
Now, again, Aaron, we do speak as old friends, mm-hmm. and this is a question that did come up frequently in the Van Susteren case. Are you sure it was only eye work?
I swear to you, Ted, nothing but just a minor tune-up mm-hmm. around the corners of my eyes.
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, Aaron, something's different around the mouth, too, isn't it?
I don't know, Ted. Maybe it's a strain of saying a headline please about 5 or 6 times a night.
Well, that is your new trademark phrase, isn't it? Favor us with it just one more time, if you would.
All right. Ted Koppel, a headline, please. There you go.
All right, now, what's the prognosis, Aaron? Are you going to have more of this type of thing?
Ted, I seriously hope not. I hope this was an aberration and not the start of a process. Let me just say, I hope Fox doesn't put Geraldo Rivera on opposite me, because I really don't feel like going out in the field and having my crew start shooting at me.
Aaron, stay with us if you can. Our next guest is a most distinguished scholar and practitioner in the field of international relations. He was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, and he's a longtime friend of this broadcast. Please welcome Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Ted. First time in this circumstance, though.
I should explain. We're going to have a little fun with Dr. Brzezinski tonight. We will discuss some of the more intractable trouble spots in the world. As you can see, he's suspended over a large tank, which we happen to have filled with oatmeal in the first of what we're calling a series of stupid professor tricks.
3, 4.
Stupid professor tricks. He's too smart to do those stupid professor tricks. Yeah.
It looks like very good oatmeal, Ted.
Well, at these prices, I should hope so. All right, Doctor, let's start out with the very difficult situation between India and Pakistan.
All right, Ted, India is a regional superpower. Pakistan is a problematic regional fulcrum type nation. And between the Hindus and the Muslims.
Well, that's very well done, sir. I hope that isn't one of your good suits.
Well, it isn't anymore.
It certainly isn't. What about Central Africa, Dr. Mm-hmm. Brzezinski? Do we just have to wait for the Rwanda-Congo tribal conflict to burn itself out?
I don't think so, Ted, and let me tell you why. And the next thing you know, you've got another Robert Mugabe on your hands.
Or another Joseph Mobutu.
Well, I'm the one getting wet. Let me use my example.
All right, fair enough. And finally, because we are running out of both time and oatmeal, give us a roadmap, if you can, of how we get from where we are now to peace in the Middle East.
Ted, the key is the Iranians. The Saudis are trying to steal a march on them at the moment, into a bona fide peace process.
Yeah!
Dr. Brzezinski, thank you so much for participating in our first stupid professor trick.
It was my pleasure, Ted.
Stupid professor tricks, yeah!
Thank you, Paul. And the transcript of Dr. Brzezinski's full comments will be on our website, so you can actually find out what's on his mind. What's on my mind is thanks to Aaron Brown,
thanks.
Dr. Brzezinski, and, of course, our own Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, thank you, Ted.
For helping me through this first broadcast. You know, change is never easy. We do hope to find this a more comfortable fit as time goes on. Tomorrow night, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the Centers of Disease Control and our list of the top 10 pedophile priests. That's our broadcast for this evening. Good night.
This has been ABC News Late Night Line. For a video recording of this program, call a friend who has TiVo. More people get their news from ABC News than is good for a healthy democracy. Good night.
The rules have changed. I'm not the same girl as I used to be. And it's getting better to be stronger. And now the day has died. I wore my hatred like a badge of pride. So pinch me if I'm dreaming. And when I saw her, I knew her. I watched her as she pushed the plate away. Should I save her? Should I get down on my knees? But I know now there's a place inside, and it holds a flame that never ever dies. And the longer it burns, the brighter it shines. So when I saw her, I knew her. I understood the hateful things she'd seen, and I spoke to her. I got down on my knees and prayed for her.
So, ladies and gentlemen, in the following up department, last week I mentioned my, not long-time goal, but I'd wished to try to achieve it at one point in time, to have all the cell phones in an audience go off at the same time as either a gag or an art project. Probably a gag. And so I got emailed the message that somebody last September at the Bruckner House Auditorium in Linz, Austria, presented a concert performed entirely through the ringing of the audience's mobile phones. Dial tones, a telesymphony. However, this guy cheated. Dial tones begins with a brief preparation phase prior to its performance, during which the members of the audience register their wireless telephone numbers at a cluster of secure web kiosks. In exchange for this information, the participants receive seating assignment tickets for the concert venue, and new ringtones are then automatically downloaded to their handsets. During the concert itself, the audience's mobile phones are brought to life by a small group of musicians who perform the phones en masse by dialing them up with a specially designed visual musical software instrument. Because the audience's positions and sounds are known to the dial tone's computer system, the performers can create spatially distributed melodies and chords as well as not. Yeah, that's... I was thinking more like... I don't know if this is apocryphal or real, but there's always been the theory that if you created a certain intensity and frequency of low-frequency tone, you could automatically motivate almost all the audience to have to go to the bathroom. Not, you know, not while they're watching television, Jamie, sorry. But, you know, in an auditorium. Now, I've been on stage with 14 bass players, and I know that most of the audience left, but I don't know where they went. Anyway, so my theory was there's some way, I still believe there's some way, without knowing people's numbers and tipping them off that way, that you can just, there's some message, there's some way to send to every cell phone in a room that makes them go ring. That's my theory. Anyway, dial tones didn't do it. They went the other way. Ladies and gentlemen, we are ending a television season marked by a new threshold. I wouldn't say bottoming out necessarily. That's a judgment for you or others to make. But certainly a new threshold has been crossed in terms of the kinds of programs that have been offered. Most of them have failed thanks to Mencken's Law being repealed. But Fear Factor is strong on NBC, where people are made to shove their faces in worms and eat rats and all sorts of stuff. So we looked forward earlier in this broadcast year to what might be coming our way next season.
Hello, I'm Bjorn Borg. You know, sometimes reality television surprises you by taking you somewhere you've never been before. Sometimes it surprises you by taking you someplace amazingly familiar, maybe even right around your own corner. We've all heard of a gut check. Well, let me invite you to look even deeper inside yourself. Welcome to the Butt Check.
Each week, young, daring contestants try to answer 10 questions. But with each question, they have to maintain their cool while an ever-escalating array of challenges comes up their own wazoo through the chamber of horrors known as the Tube.
Cooper?
Yep.
You've got 17 spiders up inside you right now. How are you feeling?
Okay. Not okay.
Well, maybe the spiders can help you with the $10,000 question. On what TV show did Tori Spelling get her start? Jennifer, that's a 120-degree propane flame inside you right now, which will increase in temperature every second you don't answer the question.
I sure hope I know it.
Me too. For $20,000, who won the Emmy for Best Actor in a Drama last year?
Uh-oh.
I think this is going to hurt the tube as much as it hurts you, Jen.
I hope so.
You've seen reality challenges before, but this time it's personal.
Join me, Bjorn Borg, for the Butt Check. It's a tube full of surprises.
The next step is the Butt Check, coming very soon. It's just two bots.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm gonna sidle slowly out of here. It's too hot to move any faster. But that does conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. Now, maybe we were interrupted this week. They just forgot to call us to tell us that, but I'm assuming that we were intact. So next week at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer, around the world, whenever you want it, at two locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like you sending for the Sea Crane Light Radio and everything else catalog. Because they give support to this program. They're at www.ccrane.com. It'd be just like you doing that if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. My thanks to Bob Dunn at WWL-TV in New Orleans for making this another walk in the park. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. There's important information coming up. Don't go to the bathroom. The show comes to you from Century Progress of Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.